You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, happy Father's Day, all you men out there. Hope you're enjoying the heat. Supposed to get up to 40 Celsius today. What's that, like 169 degrees Fahrenheit? I don't know. But it's about time, so don't complain. We live in a frigid country. It drives me nuts when Canadians complain about the heat. Well, football fans will always remember the intense stare through the number 56 helmet worn by Chicago Bears linebacker Mike Singletary. Mike is easily recognized as one of the most determined and accomplished linebackers in NFL history. With 172 starts, 1,488 tackles, 19 sacks, and 7 interceptions, what an unbelievable career this guy had. In the 12 seasons that Samurai Mike Singletary played for the Chicago Bears, he was named 10 times to the Pro Bowl team and twice named NFL's defensive player. So, folks, I want you to welcome Mike Singletary. Hey, Mike, your intensity was something fierce. Now, here's something I remember from being a young lad growing up, idolizing you. My apologies for doing that, but anyway. Well, you were like one of the very few guys that went into a tackle and you opened your eyes in the tackle as opposed to kind of jamming them shut, and you would lose contact lenses. Was that just a myth or is that real?
No, that was very real. You know, when I learned how to tackle, one of the first things that I learned was wherever the head and the eyes are, that's where the body is going. So a lot of guys close their eyes, a lot of guys put their heads down or whatever, and always wanted to follow through and try to have the best technique I possibly could.
Well, an amazing career you did have. My son and I went to Willow Creek, 15 years ago, and it was the first time to the big Willow Creek Church, and I didn't get a lot out of the message that day because I spent the entire time looking for you and Walter Payton. You know, I adjusted my priorities later in life. I was a ball player when I was younger, and now when I go to church, I look for Jesus. Is that a little bit better?
I hear you.
Yeah. Is that still your home church?
No. Well, you know what? I guess it would be, because we really haven't joined another church. We found a church out here, it's worked very well for us. Willow Creek is where we got married. We were there for like 18 years, and it was fantastic.
Well, you and Kim have been married for how many years now?
We've been married 22 years.
Well, congratulations. That would be a record in real life, let alone in the world of professional sports and celebrities, right?
No doubt.
Any hesitations marrying a white woman?
Not at all. Once I did it. But yes, there were hesitations because I guess the bottom line is everybody has their opinion about why you shouldn't. Very few have their opinion about why you should.
Right.
But I think the bottom line is once we really got down to the nuts and bolts of it, it just came down to can I live without this woman? Do I feel that this woman is the woman that God has called me to? This is my soulmate for the rest of my life. Realizing that no matter what happened, no matter what came, this is what I want.
Right.
And this is what I feel, more importantly, what God wants. And after you make that decision, then you go with it. So there were no second doubts or anything, second guessing or anything like that once you come to that point.
But Mike, I've lived around the pro sports world enough to know the women that throw themselves at you. You know, there's the in hockey we call them puck bunnies. You know, it's just got to be a tough thing being a celebrity sports athlete with that kind of scenario and being married.
I think, first of all, I'm very fortunate that I met my wife in college, and she met me when I didn't have anything.
So your head wasn't big then?
Oh, no. I guess that was the first thing. The second thing is, yes, you're right. It is one of those situations where, you know, once a guy gets into the league, you have this money, you have this notoriety, you have the fame, whatever. And for me, it would be very difficult for a young man to try and figure out, does she want me, does she want the money, is it kind of both? But I also think it's important where you spend your time. You know, a lot of these guys are looking for the right woman, in the wrong place.
Right.
You go to a club, you know, you go to the bowling alley, you go to where they are, then it's going to be very difficult to distinguish, okay, what is God's plan here? Maybe you're not supposed to be there to begin with. So for me, I just think it's really important. Yes, it's difficult in the NFL, but it's also difficult for anybody that has any amount of success in life, because people are looking for people that are successful. And it's just important that you know what you're looking for.
Okay. All right. We are on the phone with Mike Singletary, of course, a middle linebacker with the Chicago Bears for 12 years. That was quite a lengthy career. You know, your knee didn't blow out. I mean, Eddie Mack, his knee went out a bunch of times. I think he only had four seasons in total.
Wow.
You know, 12 years for you. Did you sense God's hand on your career?
No doubt about it. I played a position that throughout my career, from the very first time I put on a football suit at 13 years old, they were telling me, change your position. You are too small to play linebacker. You are too small. You're too slow. You're too short. All of my career. To have played 12 years and to just continually have a high amount of productivity, I was extremely blessed. Extremely blessed.
All right. I want to throw out a bunch of names at you here, Mike. And if you can, I'd love you to give me a one-sentence response for the following people. You ready?
Yes.
The fridge.
Did not reach his expectation. You're looking at a guy that could have been, should have been, a tremendous football player. He's known more for his size and folk heroism and being a running back than he was as a football player. If he had been the kind of guy that had discipline in his life and had wisdom to listen, he could have been something really, really special.
Yeah, it did seem like he was sort of turned into a novelty act, a marketing product.
Exactly.
And that's unfortunate. I was at a Grey Cup party with a guy I used to train with here in the CFL, Hank Olisek, and they had the Super Bowl rings there, and they had William Perry's Super Bowl ring. You could have driven a little Toyota through this ring, man. It was the biggest ring I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Mike Ditka.
Enthusiasm. Passion.
Passion. He seemed like a passionate, intense. Who would you say would be a coach in the NFL today that would be similar to his style?
Today? Wow. Don't know about today anybody that could match that, but Dan Reeves was about the closest guy that I know that came to it. Or you know what, the guy that's at Pittsburgh, Bill Collins.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
He just seems to have that sort of, it's almost like the intensity a DB has, you know?
Yes.
Like those guys are psychotic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Jim McMahon.
Cool.
But was he really cool, though?
You know what? He thought so. I think, in all honesty, I when I look at Jim McMahon, I would say more of a paradox than anything else. He was really misunderstood by a lot of people, but to his teammates, he was a leader. He was a very good leader, and you wouldn't think that by what you saw as a fan, but this guy was a really good leader, and he was also passionate in another kind of way in terms of what he did. He did all that other silly stuff and, you know, the undiscipline and things like that. You never know what he's going to say or do, but, you know, if I had the opportunity, I'd definitely want him as my quarterback.
Really?
No doubt.
Nice to hear that confidence is still there, really.
Oh, yeah.
When I think of Jim McMahon, I think of the Super Bowl shuffle. You know, and one of the lines I remember from William, what was the thing? My name is William, and I'm the rookie. I may be large, but I'm no dumb cookie.
Oh, yeah.
What was your line? Do you remember?
I'm Samurai Mike. I stop them cold, part of the defense, big and bold. Give me a chance, I'll rock you good. Nobody mess in my neighborhood.
Are you embarrassed that you still remember that?
Not at all.
No.
I'm embarrassed I did it.
Yeah.
I'm not embarrassed that I remember it.
You signed off on that puppy, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's classic. All right. I want to jump to Walter Payton.
Greatness.
Do you miss him? Were you tight?
No. We were, it's a strange way to explain it. We had tremendous amount of respect for each other. When we saw each other, we always enjoyed each other's company. But I was too serious for Walter, and he had too much fun in him for me.
Right.
So, no, we didn't spend a lot of time together, but there were times we got together, but from afar, from a distance. You know, we just didn't run in the same circles.
Yeah.
But I really loved Walter. Really loved him and really admired him and really respected him.
And a brother in the Lord.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jumping teams and a dichotomy of fun and intensity. LT.
I would say Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
That's the best way. You know, he was his own worst enemy. LT was a guy that, you know, he was Lawrence Taylor. When he was Lawrence Taylor, he's the best guy you want to be around. When he was LT, didn't want to be around him.
Really? Always fighting those demons, man.
Always fighting those demons.
Somebody recently, I can't remember who it was, told me that he is on a really fascinating spiritual journey right now.
I certainly hope so. I've heard good things here and there, but... you know, it's always great to hear those things.
Yeah.
And I'm sure at some point in time I'll see him somewhere, I'll talk to him or whatever it is. But I like LT.
Yeah.
No. I like Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah.
LT, you know, like I said, whenever he gets LT and put him in a box, he's going to be all right.
Mike Singletary on the phone with this middle linebacker with Chicago Bears. You know who you bumped off the show today? You bumped off Frank Gifford. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I don't feel good about that at all.
I couldn't think of two better guys to have on the Father's Day show than Frank Gifford, who Kathy Lee has said is the best mom she's ever met.
Oh, wow.
That's great. Wow. He's great with the kids, you know, or yourself. And, of course, Mike Singletary here. Yourself, a father of seven. Do you still get that reaction? People go, seven kids, good night. What were you thinking?
Oh, yeah. You know, whenever you're in a crowd or something like that and you hear, and we have seven kids, you ooh.
Really, eh?
Yeah.
And the next question is, did your wife homeschool? Because it just seems that parents have like a 7, 8, 12, 15 kids. They all homeschool them.
Well, it seemed that way. I don't think there was ever a thought for my wife. I don't think she ever thought twice about homeschooling. I thought about it for a moment, but, you know, she was the one that was going to have to do the bulk of the teaching.
Yeah.
And I think it was a wise thing.
All right. Raising the kids. You know, you admitted earlier that Walter Payton is a fun guy, and you were kind of ultra serious. You were a bit wound up. Have you lightened up as a dad?
Yes. Yes, I have lightened up. You know, I think one of the best things about, you know, being a dad and really for most guys, it's just a matter of the wife is the one that really knows the kids. You know, she's the one that has the heartbeat of the kids. And if you're going to be a great dad, it's really important to sit down and sit down with your wife and say, okay, what are some of the things that you think I need to do? What are some of the ways in which I can reach this kid better? And kind of come up with a game plan. And I think if mom and dad are not working together and not talking about it together, then there are going to be some of those kids that are falling through the cracks.
So would you say then that Kim helped you lighten up? Kim helped you get the balance in the parenting?
No, there's no doubt about it. You know, there were several times on a couple of our kids that I was dead wrong on. I thought, hey, you know what? I know what's best for this kid. He, you know, he needs a good kick.
Yeah.
And Kim was, no. That you're totally misreading this kid, and it's the wrong thing you're going to do, and you're going to destroy the spirit of the kid. And I know you don't want to do that. And so, you know, we had to sit down and talk about it and gain a new perspective and go from there.
Hmm. Let's talk about the family you grew up in. Mike Singletary was raised by a single mom. Is that right, pretty much?
Yes.
From what age?
Well, from 12 on.
Boy, right when you started getting screwy into the teenage years.
Yes. Exactly right.
Dad left. Why did he leave? Marriage just breaking down, normal stuff, or was there anything weird going on?
Well, you know what? When I look back at it, I think what happened to my family is what happened to a lot of families. And you know, right around between 40 and 45, or maybe 40 and 50, you know, there are certain things that you know, you begin to look at the stresses on a marriage, whether it's your parents are beginning to get older and maybe you have to deal with them. You begin to have teenagers and your family's not working out quite the way you thought it was going to work out. Maybe you're not where you are in your job, where you think you need to be, and that causes frustration as well. And I think it's around that time when that marriage, you know, is up in around 20 to 25 years that those things begin to happen. And if mom and dad are not hanging out together and constantly working together and solving problems together, chances are they're going to grow apart.
When your dad left, was that it, or did you maintain contact with him?
Oh, yeah, I maintained contact with him. We had a family business, a construction business, and, you know, we continued to work. I continued to work with my dad. I'm the last of 10 kids, so I continued to work with him and still, you know, had a fear of my dad. So there was no disrespect or anything like that, just one of those situations. My mom passed away just a couple of years ago. And to be very honest with you, it's the strangest thing in my life because, you know there's a God when I feel the way I do after she passed away. There was a time, because my mom and I were so close, and my mom was my best friend until I got married. We just spent so much time together, and I'm the son, I'm the kind of son that, you know, whatever my mom wanted, whatever I could do to get it, I would. And I loved her from my soul. And she was not only my mother, she was my sister in the Lord, and taught me so many things. So I began to think, you know, because I know mom was getting up in age and you know, wasn't feeling well at times. And, you know, I began to think, you know, I know I'm not going to have mom forever, but I don't know how in the world I would deal with not having her. Because we talk just about every day. So the Lord just began to prepare my heart. And it's just, you know, my mom's been through a lot, you know, 10 kids and I'm the last one, and divorce and things just weren't going very well. Kids are not doing very well. That's tough on a mom, particularly my mom. So when she passed away, there was this sense of me. I remember the day my sister called me when my mom fell in the chair, and the Lord took her home. I remember my sister calling me, and we were in Baltimore, and she was crying and screaming when she called me and said, "Mike, you know, mom just fell. You know, I don't know what's going on. The paramedics are trying to, you know, they're going to come and they're going to try and revive her and all that." And there was this peace that came over me at that moment. And at the same time, you know, I began to cry because, man, yeah, you talk about loving somebody. And I just picked up my Bible and went outside and began to walk around and just began to pray, "Lord, don't take her. I need to see her one more time. Let me see her one more time." And the Lord spoke to me in my spirit, said, "Mike, do you really want me to bring her back? Do you really want me to bring her back?" He said, "I want you to take a look at her right now." And as I looked up toward heaven, I saw my mom jumping from cloud to cloud. I saw her with her mom. I saw her with my wife's grandpa. They are getting to know each other for the first time. And I saw her with friends that have passed away. And I honestly had a smile on my face with tears in my eyes at the same time. And I said, "Lord, no. I thank you. I thank you so much for the time that you allowed me to have with my mom. I am so thankful. I'm the most blessed man in the world." And I just said, "Bye, Mom. I love you, and I'm going to miss you." But every day that I raise my kids, every decision that I make, Everything that I become, most of it will be because of you and what you have taught me, and I thank you. And I will be the man that you call me to, that you raised me to be. I will be that father, and I will be that husband. I will not let you down. Since that day, every time I think of my mom, many decisions that I make, Mom, you're right. And you were right. You told me about this. I'm crossing this road here. I'm crossing this path. But she taught me so much, and there was a legacy that she gave me and she left me that I want to leave for my own kids. She did something that to me was just tremendous. So I am, to this day, I think I'm the most blessed man in the world to have a mom like I had.
Man, what a tribute, Mike. That's very cool, man. Very, very cool. You know, speaking of that legacy thing, there's a lot, you know, that jargon is pretty popular within the Christian scene these days, and people selling books around it and stuff and leaving the legacy for the kids. And you know, and fathers, I don't know, there's a kind of a weird scenario here. We got Jesus guys that, to be quite honest, they suck spiritually. They're floaters. You know what I mean? They're on cruise. There's a lot of men that just seem to be struggling with spiritual intimacy because they struggle with intimacy, period. So it just floats over to the spiritual intimacy side anyway, right?
Right.
But at the same time, dads have this amazing impact on the children. Sometimes I think more so than mothers in so many ways. And they sell themselves so short, and it drives me nuts, Mike, when I see guys quitting on their kids or quitting on their families or quitting on their marriages. You know, all of that is to say, What are we going to say to guys today who are listening to fire them up? You know, I mean, I think they've been kicked in the head enough.
Well, it's like when you look at fathers, you know, that's the ultimate. And I think so many people, so many men and women are floaters today, particularly fathers, in their own relationship with their kids because that's all they know. That's all they saw. They got floating from their father. So I've learned that you can only give what you have really been given. So that's where I think it comes from to begin with. They haven't seen the example, and there are not a whole lot of examples out there.
But Mike, your dad split, so that way you got a poor example, but you lifted your game somehow.
Well, you know what? I think the biggest thing that I did is I really, really allowed myself to be adopted by the Lord. I allowed myself to really, really come underneath the authority of a holy God that I could learn. When I forgave my dad and asked for forgiveness for my attitude toward him, because I did not like him for many years, and when I sat down with him, I began to understand, I'm looking at this shell of a man that could only give me what he got. And the same thing happened to him, and probably the same thing happened to his dad. So I'm just being passed this baton that was broken when I got it. So when I began to look at that and realize it for what it was and be honest about it, I said, Lord, I don't want to pass on another broken baton to my own family, my own sons and daughters. I want to be raised and I want to be taught by you. I want your example, and I know that you never quit. I know that you never give up, and I know that you never stop trying. I know you never stop loving me, and I want to love with that uncompromising, that agape love. I want to love with that deep love that surpasses all understanding. I want to love with the First Corinthians love that it never fails, and I believe that the Lord has given me that. And when I look at my kids and I'm raising our kids, you know, it's one of those things my wife and I continue to talk about. We need to stop these expectations that we have for our kids, and oh, they let us down. And you know what? It's just part of the journey, and it's not over until it's over. And we just have to keep working and keep praying and keep fighting and putting our kids in the situation to win. But we got to do our best, and we got to run this race, and don't ever stop till you cross that finish line. So for me, I want to give my kids everything I've got, and I'm always trying to maximize the moment with my kids, always looking for teaching opportunities, always looking for a reason to hug them and love them and just spend time with them. And let them know that I care about them.
You know, Mike, I learn a lot from other guys' mistakes. I learn a lot from my own mistakes, but I like hearing when other people can be, you know, vulnerable enough to say, you know, as a dad, here's an example of how I screwed up. Here's something I tried and didn't work. Can you own some of that stuff, Mike? Can you share with us some fathering stuff that you kind of went down that road and went, you know what, later, a little bit later you went, uh-uh, that's not the right way to go?
Well, you know what, every day, you know, there's something that I'm doing wrong.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah, no, I mean, every day. But the most important part of it is that I don't ever look at myself as failing, whether it's how I handle a situation. And I tell my kids all the time, the greatest thing that I have with my kids is I don't care how bad they are, I don't care how dumb the decisions they make are, I can always look back at my own life and say, hey, you know what? I've been there.
Yeah, you made a few of those yourself.
Yeah, I've been there, and I know what you're feeling, and this is why I have to do what I'm doing, just to let you know that the next time that you think about doing it, you're not going to want to do it, because it's really going to leave a bad taste in your mouth. But I just think, for me, in all honesty, I know that every day I'm failing at something. But as long as I don't look at it as failure, as long as I don't look at it as, you know what, I really stink as a father, I'm not going to speak that into my life. I'm going to say, you know what, when I go to my kids, and I think the best thing that I do with my kids is I go to them and I say, you know what, that was a bad decision. Or I handled that wrong. And I want to apologize. And I'm going to own my part of it. And I would expect you to do the same thing. And just know that I love you. And we'll go from there. And I'll ask them, hey, forgive me. Will you forgive me? Because that was just, I just did not handle that right. And that was wrong. I'll call it what it is when I do it.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing that I can do for my kids.
Mike Singletary, tough son of a gun, you know, role model for a lot of guys. You're intense. You carry that over into raising up the boys. And, you know, that kind of matches, that fits. I get that as a dad, and I've got a son too. But, man, did I ever have to shift gears raising my daughter. That's a whole world I was not ready for, let me tell you. From feminine hygiene products to all of a sudden they have breasts to, makeup all over the stinking house. I just, that took me a whole lot of getting used to. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean. I take as much pride in raising my daughters as, if not more, than my son.
Really?
Yes, I do.
But were you that same intense son of a gun with your girls too?
Are you kidding me? I should let them talk to you.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Whoa. Where's the belt? Hey, wait. Where's the top half of the pants? Well, you know, what happened to the other the shirt that goes with that?
Yeah.
I mean, I should let you talk to them. Now that would have been something. I should let you talk to my oldest daughter. We have some interesting conversations.
And that's the one thing I want to get across here, you know, because you role modeled for me not being a quitter. And I think guys quit too early. They quit on their marriages. They quit on their kids. They spend more time in the office because you can get more control there. You're losing control at home. And then you start, you know, sort of poo-pooing on yourself. Oh, man, I suck as a dad. And, oh, the kids are driving me nuts. And, oh, I'm not real good at the marriage. And you start getting all negative and down and down and down. But especially as it comes to the girls, you know, what do I know? And she doesn't like me, and she wants, you know, she used to run into my arms, and now she's a teenager, and she runs away from me. Forget it. I'm just going to spend more time at the office. I see more girls who are sexually promiscuous because their fathers have retreated from the relationship. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's one of the things that I tell my son who's 18, my oldest son. My youngest son is 8, but I tell my son who's 18, and I tell him, I said, look, you need to know something. You see how hard that I work in trying to help your sisters understand what's out there, to try and help them avoid the pitfalls of adultery, fornication, whatever it might be. I want you to know, do you see how hard that we, Mom and I, work in this household? I said, there are other fathers that they're working just as hard, or they may not know any better. they don't know that they're leaving that vulnerable daughter. And when you take her out, when you sit down and talk to her, she may be looking at you for the love that she's not getting at home. And I'm asking you and I'm challenging you, don't go there.
Yeah, good.
Love her enough to respect her and respectfully decline. However deep it gets, respectfully decline. And so I want to tell you something. You will be the most blessed guy as you take that into your own marriage. And remember that I'm telling you this because it's going to happen a lot.
Beautiful. Very well said. Mike Singletary One-on-One is basically, that's your guts. That's your story, is it not?
Oh, yeah. That's the last one.
That's the most recent one. And, folks, you need to go out and get this one. There's another one which really intrigued me. It's called Daddy's Home at Last. And tell us about the other two.
Well, the other two, the first one I wrote was Calling the Shots. Calling the Shots is more of a football book. I wrote that around 86. And that's more about the road to the Super Bowl, how that happened, and some of the things that, the stories that happened, and how we got to that point.
Okay.
The next book is Singletary on Singletary. That's the second one. And that's more about my life, how I came to be who I am, my morals, my thought process, my beliefs, my Lord. So that's what that's about.
And I love the way this last book is set up, 60 daily readings in Mike Singletary One-on-One. Kind of weaves in your own personal story and the faith behind your life, your journey, right?
Exactly.
I appreciate your guts. I appreciate you shooting straight. I appreciate the example you've been over the years. And as a dad, you know, as a father of seven, this book, Daddy's Home at Last, I want to encourage everybody to go out and pick that up. Mike, thanks for your time, man. Happy Father's Day tomorrow.
Hey, thank you very much, and God bless you, and take care.
Thanks, Mike. Take care. Bye-bye. Mike Singletary on the Drew Marshall Show. Folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, if you could say one thing to your dad before he died, what would it be? What would it be? We're going to open up the phone lines, 905-338-1250. The reason we're going to do this is, you know, there's so many dads who I think are so unapproachable and uncomfortable also with intimate conversations. So I thought we would give you the opportunity to finally say what you've always wanted to say to your dad on this Father's Day weekend. 905-338-1250. If you could say one thing to your dad before he died, what would it be? Phone lines are open right now to get in on. We're going to go to a couple of commercials here. When we come back, we're going to give away some books. Mike Singletary's latest book, One-on-One. It'll be a bit of a late Father's Day gift because we won't be able to get it to you by tomorrow. But we'll mail it out to you, folks. Free gifts and a chance to say what you've always wanted to say to your dad on the Drew Marshall Show when we come back. 905-338-1250. Stay with us.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.